And welcome back to Buzzardry. It is March the 6th, just after 7 o'clock Central Time. I'm Patrick McGee. I'm here with Jake Fitzgerald and Jonathan Brent. How are you guys doing?
I'm all right, given the circumstances.
Yep, about the same. Not too bad today.
Yeah, so what we are going to do is we're just going to, instead of kind of doing a regular recap of basketball and baseball, just kind of, I guess, have a general discussion about kind of the statuses of those teams right now. Talk about just how basketball did this last week, how baseball did this last week, and then preview the conference tournament for basketball, and then this upcoming weekend against La Tech baseball. Then go over the football schedule there at the end. That was released since we recorded, and then take a couple questions. But I guess starting with basketball, you know, two losses, I think. You know, the first one was a really tough one just because, you know, it was a game where you had got down by 15, and you know, you get up there, you get up two at the under four, but then South Alabama, you know, is able to you know, come back and win there at the end. And it's just frustrating that you know, you go 3-19 from three, they shoot 10-28, and it's just, that was kind of the difference maker in the game. And then, you know, the second game really didn't matter. It was, you know, I guess the difference between the 5 and the 6 seed, which there is a difference, but the double bye was gone to that point, which, you know, still would have been in play if you could have beaten South Alabama heading into that Friday. So I don't know if there's a ton you can read from these two games, but I guess what was the other guys, or I guess the being not a ton you read from the second game, the first game, just kind of the tail of the season where you have played some really consistent basketball. And then, you know, some inconsistent basketball. The second game, I think, was almost like a glorified exhibition. But what was y'all's, I guess, initial thoughts on those two games?
Yeah, I'll put my hand up. I didn't see a play of the Saturday game. I was out of town and was more focused on baseball. But, again, that was a glorified exhibition. No Crowley, no double bye. Just depends on what kind of direction you're hitting the bracket from. And the team knew that, too, knowing that this week in Pensacola was a whole lot more important than anything that could have possibly come out of that Lafayette game. But yeah, you said it. That South game was tough. Feel like it started out the way a lot of games did this year, where you dig yourself an early hole on the road, give up a lot of threes early in both halves. I think where we may have won the Lafayette game at home with our early runs in each half, South definitely did that against us. And again, they're South, so that inherently gives them an advantage when they play us. but yeah, I've alluded to it on other episodes. College basketball is really simple this year for home and home games. For the home team, you probably win. For the away team, you probably lose. Unfortunately, we're the away team the last two games of the year.
Yeah, you said it. Pretty bummed over that South Alabama game, considering the implications. But, you know, moving forward, you know, looking forward to our play tomorrow in Pensacola and see if we can't make a little bit of a run, you know. All the season, unfortunately, in a league like the Sun Belt, the whole season comes down to the next few days. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you want to look at like the positive things. You look at Curbelo in that South game, of course, 25 on 16 shots, which is pretty good. Played all 40 minutes. Waco was excellent, MVP in the KenPom column. He had 16 on 11 shots. So yeah, I mean, I guess kind of getting into this conference tournament, I mean, you're going to play Texas State tomorrow, probably be today when most people are listening to this, but Thursday, 5 o'clock in Pensacola. And I think you just kind of look at the tournament overall, like Fitz said, I mean, that's what the whole season comes down to. But you kind of feel like they would have to put together four consecutive, consistently good performances. And you just really haven't seen that all year. I mean, I think the most you've gotten was maybe three in a row, that Georgia State, GMU, ULM, three-game swing, I guess, when you won all three of those games and played pretty well. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, it is just kind of based on how this team has performed, you know, just too inconsistent to see them putting together four straight games together or four straight games at a neutral site. But, I mean, if you want to look on the bright side, I guess two things you would say, that USM, you know, I guess the kind of the trio of Curbelo, Crowley, and Owako that might be in terms of raw talent, the most talented core in the league, just when you kind of look at their high school profile, those are all blue chip guys. Coming to high school, you think, well, you know, if they can all play their best basketball of the year, that can be, you know, a dangerous combination. And then I guess you just kind of look at the bracket part of it. with Texas State. So you're able to split with Texas State. And then if you can beat Texas State, you play Troy, who you split with. And then if you can beat Troy, then you would be playing probably JMU if you get chalk in the bracket, who you're able to beat. And JMU, the only two teams they lost to all year were USM and App State twice. So the path to the final is likely going to be all teams that you've beaten. So I guess those are kind of the two positive things to look at. But, yeah, I guess how do you guys see how the team is kind of leading into the tournament? Just sort of how the bracket pans out.
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on it. This team, when they play close to perfect basketball, I think can beat anyone in this field. You saw it when we played JMU. You saw it with UL at home. Just played close to complete basketball with everybody on the court, I guess, minus Ivory, which sucks. But this team with its worst basketball can easily lose to anyone on the field. It's kind of how college basketball is in March when in a league like this with that doesn't have a runaway favorite. Not that JMU and App are hundreds of spots higher than us in KenPom and everything, but I think that a less talented Southern Miss, and what year was it that we beat Middle in that game, 17 or 18?
18.
18. I think that we're more talented than that 18 team for sure. And if they can do it in March, that's what the crazy thing is about this month in college basketball. And that's why I love it. And that's why it's got some more integrity than college football does. And college baseball still has it as well, where the little guys can do something. And I hope that's us. I think that this Texas State matchup is going to probably start a whole lot like the first two, where it looks like a lid's on the rim the first half, and it's going to be a defensive, just ugly basketball game to watch. But hopefully we can pull that one out. We've got two games of film against them, and again, minus Crowley, hopefully it sounds like he's good to go, so we are as close to a full strength as we have been, minus Ivory all year. But yeah, it's not tough to tamper your expectations given the showing we had last year with a much higher seed.
Yeah, I'm glad you followed it up with that, because I have a lot of the same feelings as you. As I understand that anything can happen, and that March basketball is what it is, but seeing how we've played as of late, especially not at home, four in a row is a tall task. So I'm not going to say it can't be done, but I will be surprised if we're able to get to that championship game, especially and then win it. But all the faith in the world here.
Yeah, and I guess you look at that Texas State game, and Brent was kind of alluding to it, but I mean, it's going to be a low-scoring game almost, definitely. I mean, Texas State, they play slow, and they kind of get into a slog. And you look, their offense, 290 in adjusted efficiency, but their defense, 113 in adjusted efficiency. That's one of the better marks in the league. But it's going to be, probably in the low 60s of possessions. So it's probably going to be one of those games. It'll be like a 60-59 game that would likely come down, to the last couple minutes. I mean, that's kind of how the first two games against Texas State went. Texas State, they escaped against Old Dominion. They won 92-83 in overtime. Old Dominion had made a buzzer beater to win the game, but it got waved off, and the broadcast was weird because they didn't have the clock synced up on the broadcast that it was actually like at the Bay Center in Pensacola. So it looked like they had one, but they didn't. But I mean, I guess if you want to look at a kind of a silver lining, is like maybe Texas State's a little more tired since they played in overtime. But then you also look at, they get that extra day of rest, which I guess that was kind of a topic last year during that South Alabama game. But I guess the last thing I would say on the conference tournament is one of the best feelings in one bid league basketball is winning your quarterfinals game to get to the semifinals. Because by then, you can kind of taste the auto bid. And, you kind of saw that, in 2018, even 20. I mean, really, anytime USM's won a quarterfinal game, those are some of the most, gratifying wins. So if this team can at least just get to Sunday and create kind of some excitement and some hope, I think that would make me mostly happy. I mean, obviously, you're going there to win. But if you can get to that semifinal, and I think you start to see a lot of people go down there by Sunday from USM, probably playing JMU. So yeah, hopefully you can get to that Sunday round. So, you guys have anything else on the conference tournament?
No, I think I'm good. But yeah, I agree. The semifinals is where you start to see that big life-size ticket with the Southern Miss logo on it, punching it to the dance, and even though we've only done that once in my lifetime, it's fun to envision it.
Okay, so we are, and I guess just one thing, one last thing on basketball. If you want to look, if people want to look way ahead and see, well, what seed would USM get in the tournament if they could somehow pull this off, which I shouldn't even be saying this. But so I was looking at just the net rankings, and USM is above, I think, three conference leaders right now, which would put, I guess, if they went straight down by net, that would put USM, I guess, as the top in the play-in game. But, you know, there'll probably be a couple teams that win below USM that'll bump, that would bump USM up in the seed list. And you would probably be able to avoid Dayton, although I would think it would be a 16 seed just because you'd still probably be sub 200 in net. But I think if you can win this automatic bid, 16 seed, hopefully avoid Dayton. Maybe best case scenario, a bunch of chaos happens, a bunch of lower seeds win their conference tournament, 15 seed. So yeah, looking way ahead, and I'm sure I just jinxed the team heading into Pensacola. So
here's a hot take. I think I prefer Dayton. I think it's an easier way to get your first tournament win, and you get a standalone game, a winnable game. And if you don't make it, if you don't win, you don't get beat by 60 by the one seed. So you save that. That's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting really weird now that it's March, but I wouldn't hate Dayton.
Yeah, I just like having, when the selection Sunday comes up, I like having just the Southern Miss, not the, when it says like, oh, USM versus, you know, Prairie View or whoever. So
that's fair.
But yeah, I do. I mean, that would certainly be USM's best chance to win a tournament game versus playing, you know, Purdue or Houston or whoever. So.
Yeah, 15, and watch out, UNC, Marquette, Tennessee, and whoever else are coming for you.
Okay, so we will move on to baseball. So since we last recorded, USM 2-3, won a weekend series against Indiana State, won those Friday and Saturday games, lost Sunday, but two midweek losses, lost to Nichols and Biloxi, and then losing to Mississippi State last night in Pearl, pretty painful loss. But I guess, what is y'all's current take on the baseball team and kind of where they stand right now, and things you see you like, things you don't like, and kind of how it looks going forward?
Loaded question, Pat. Fitz, you want to go?
I'll say what everybody's thinking, right? I think that we've shown a lot of flashes, especially offensively, but we're just not there. We're not where we want to be. You know, not being able to put together a full weekend, and I get it, Indiana State's a tough opponent, and you know, they're hopefully having a fantastic season moving forward, but it's a little annoying that, you know, you play the way you do against Nichols, lose that game, and then you start out just on fire offensively against Mississippi State, and then you go eight straight innings with basically nothing offensively. It's a head scratcher, and I don't think that the season is doomed or anything crazy like that, but we got to figure something out, and I don't know what that may be, but
yeah, I think we've got an offense of a bunch of paper cuts when it comes to scoring right now. People were saying we might be back after the, what do we have, 12 or 13 hits against Nichols. Well, I think it was 13, 12 were singles. I think 12 singles and 3 walks is essentially the same thing as 7 singles and 8 walks. Like, we may have been trending around the first 10 games of the year. And then we have 10 home runs and I think 7 or solo shots, and the rest are 2 runs. We're just not scoring in bunches. I don't think there's a shortage of getting guys on. I'll give us our flowers in that we are, but we're just not doing damage when guys are on. And I think a lot of guys are getting really cold. I think Russo's got 1 hit since the New Orleans game. I think Ozzie Pratt has 5 hits in his last 8 games. The catchers have combined for 5 hits this entire season. And opponents are 18 for 19 on the base pass against us. I'm really concerned about that. I don't think that's getting talked enough about. But other than Sunday, you can say the pitching staff's met every expectation. And we're putting a whole lot of pressure on them. I wouldn't even say we threw the ball bad Tuesday night. I think that five runs in a midweek game against an SEC lineup you'd take every day if you gave us that, gave any of us that option before the game. I think Nico's been fantastic as a Friday night guy. Pat, you showed those stats of his numbers so far compared to the last four Fridays. Billy's been Billy. We've had some bullpen pieces step up and do some really cool things. I think we're as deep as we can be. And I think the potential is there. We may not be as experienced of a lineup as we had the last 2 years when we started kind of cold, but we've got to start scoring in bunches and converting when those guys are on and not being scared to add on the leads when we have them, because you're leaving a pitching staff zero room for error. And when that happens, it's inevitably eventually going to tip.
Yeah. So I think you look at this lineup, or I guess you kind of look at kind of the question marks or the big things we kind of emphasize for the season. Talking about like Mazza being an ace, and you know, like Brent said, I mean, he's definitely been an ace. So you look at that as being a positive. And you look at, like, you know, Pedro, we said he had to be in 1,000 plus OPS guy. Well, so far he has a, you know, a 1064 OPS. You know, Wilkes hasn't hit that mark. But yeah, I mean, 751 OPS as a team. And again, like was alluded to earlier, you just haven't had enough production at several positions. You haven't had enough. I mean, catcher, I think Odom is a guy that can be good in the future. I think he's someone, you know,
I agree.
Down the line can be a really good player here. But I think right now he's probably just not ready. And I think, you know, in previous years he was a guy that probably would have got the red shirt. So I think you probably need to have in Tucker Stockman getting some more starts just based on he's probably a little more polished as a hitter, has a better arm. I don't know exactly what his framing skills are like. You know, I was just listening to Creel on the radio. He was talking about, you know, how he has a bazooka for an arm was the word he used. So, and then, you know, first base again, you know, Russo 639 OPS. I mean, that's just pretty unacceptable, you know, flat out at that position that doesn't have a ton of defensive value. So, and again, you know, Pratt, I think Pratt will eventually will probably be fine as we get deeper into the year. You know, he got off to a hot start and then he's been cold, but I think kind of look at just his previous production, has enough of a track record that you would think he would get it going. I think you look at Dalton McIntyre and someone who I've come around on a little bit. I think early in the year, I was kind of thinking, well, you know, he, you know, not going to be a power guy at all, but I think he's someone you maybe keep an eye on about. I would move him down to 8 or 9 just because I like have a little more pop there at the top of the lineup. But I think, you know, he's someone that can, you know, if he hits it, you know, in the infield, he's got a decent chance of beating it out. But yeah, I mean, in the pitching, I mean, your weekend rotation's been, again, Mazza. I guess the thing you look at with Oldham is the walks have been a little bit of a problem. I mean, he walked 7 and 15 innings, although I think his strikeout numbers are up. I mean, his K9 rate is over 9 now. And then you look at Armistead, which we'll see how, I guess, that La Tech game will be, you know, big for him just in terms of the bounce back. He did fine after that first inning against Indiana State, but got hit hard, had a couple mistake pitches, just a couple hit batters, and they were able to make him pay with the opposite field home run. But I think you have to get more production at catcher and at first base. And you got to have some of your guys that, you know, have been proven producers, like Wilkes, who has improved in the past, you know, week and a half or so compared to where he was at the beginning of the year. Monastir's rounding into form. But, I mean, really toward the end of the lineup, you just haven't been getting enough production at all. And it's, you know, made it to where you've been a, you know, below average offense this year.
Yeah, I agree with the fact that I kind of alluded last episode to the offense is going to go as the returners go. And Monastir, about halfway into Saturday's game, looked as lost as he ever has been here. And he's turned it around in the last 2.5 games. And Carson's taken some better swings. And Slade had a pretty big breakout with the freak inside the Parker Friday and another good game Saturday. And I hope that those guys can set the tone. And McIntyre keeps getting on base. Maybe see Gillespie or someone at first, or whether that's Gillespie or Luke or any kind of bat that could provide a spark. You just can't have a 639 OPS at first. And maybe it's Russo. Maybe he turns around. But like you said, no production out of catcher or first right now, and at a time where we really need it.
Yeah, you said it all. I mean, I think I mentioned on the last episode that you've got to see a lot of consistency from that middle of the lineup. And like I said before, we're seeing flashes, right? You said Slade. I mean, you talked about Slade's big game, really a couple games, and then after that, he kind of seems like he went right back to where he was in the beginning. And I don't mean to pick on him. I'm just kind of talking about the lineup as a whole, but especially that middle part where you expect so much better. But until we get to that point, I think we're just going to see a lot of the same.
Yeah, and I mean, not to press the fast forward switch this early in the year, but I think if you don't see any improvement from these guys that have been in the system a couple of years, I think that Oz may have to be prepared to hit the portal more than he probably wants to at these positions. Like, I guarantee you there's a 15 home run, 850 OPS guy in the portal you can pluck. I guarantee you there's a catcher that can defend in the portal that you can pluck. You got to, with a program like this and a pitching staff like we have, you got to use that leverage and that status that we have nationally and to your advantage, I think, and got to have a short leash.
Yeah. And I guess just kind of talking about the bullpen, it was kind of interesting how they used the relievers yesterday. So Boswell got the start, went two innings, got pulled in. You know, they really, you know, Osborne was talking about how, you know, they were going to get some guys in, but I mean, he really seemed to take this game pretty seriously. I mean, going to Colby Allen, who, has been good this season. And then bring him back after the rain delay. I mean, that's typically something you really don't ever see unless it's, you know, a huge weekend series or a regional. And then, you know, going to guys like Sibley that have been proven, and then going to Middleton and, you know, down a run for multi-innings or for multiple innings. So just kind of interesting how they approach that. And I think that is, you know, that's part of your core there is your Sibleys and your Middletons and your Allen's there in the pen. But I mean, I guess one of the guys that you would kind of look at that's been not a huge surprise, but a guy that's, you know, kind of came out of nowhere just because he didn't pitch a lot, although, you know, he pitched well in that game at Tulsa last year, but Chase Adams, I mean, has a 1.13 ERA, 0.38 whip. He's gotten into the low 90s, you know, pretty good pitch ability. So I think he's somebody you can rely on going forward. I think McCarty English, you know, he's gotten up. I mean, he's thrown 8 1/3 innings. I mean, his numbers, I guess, are just okay, but he's shown flashes. So I still think, you know, I think you have a bona fide ace. I think you have two passable starters, and just in the sense that, you know, they're not going to be a guy that has the ability to completely handcuff an SEC or like a really quality lineup like a Mazza can, but they can get you enough. They can give you a chance to win the game, which we saw Oldham do last year. And I think, you know, Armistead has that ability too, you know, coming in relief last year against Auburn and pitching well. But I guess general thoughts on the bullpen right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of those guys that you named, the Colby Allens and the Chase Adams and the Middletons, I think a lot of those guys could start for a lot of other schools in America on the weekends. And we've got a wealth of riches, even the freshman arms. Peyton Lacy hasn't given up a run. You mentioned McCarty English. He could start as a true freshman some places. I think that they've impressed me a lot and just shown proof of how deep this pen is. And Oz keeps alluding to guys that have been maybe dinged up since opening day that hadn't even thrown any yet, that sounds pretty convicted that they're going to help us by the end of the year too. So yeah, just extremely deep staff. I say it every week.
Yeah. And I guess just kind of talking about the lineup more generally, I mean, it sounds like, yeah, Davis Gillespie possibly getting a look at first base, according to Creel on Eagle Hour. I mean, he hasn't performed, I guess, a ton. I mean, it's 626 OPS. He does have one home run, but I mean, I think you got to at some point try something different if you can't get anything from Russo or Luke. They did go to Luke at one point late in the game in a pinch hit roll and grounded out. So we'll see, you know, what kind of shakeups there are in the lineup. But yeah, you know, pitching has done its job. Offense, I mean, if it could just be kind of average in that, you know, 810 to 820 mark, I mean, you'd probably be, 10-3, I would think. You know, maybe even 11-2, really probably winning that game against Marist. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the thing that holds the team back right now. So are we ready to move on to La Tech?
I'll say one thing, that just because his name hasn't been said yet, and he's done such a great job since he's been in there, and he's kind of the man of the hour on the social medias right now. But Butler's been unbelievable since being a mainstay in the lineup. He's 381, 1,200 OPS, tied for the team lead in home runs with half the games played. Hope he can keep that up. He's been a spark for us.
Yeah, so moving on to I guess La Tech preview. So they are 12-0. They're playing Xavier right now. We're down 1-0 in the fourth. As of me speaking right now. But, I mean, yeah, certainly they've gotten off to a great start. I mean, they haven't really played great competition. I mean, they swept Kent State, which was a good team. Like, I mean, Kent State would have been a really dangerous 4 seed, you know, maybe even a 3 seed if they had won their automatic bid last year. But, yeah, I mean, they swept in without much of a problem. And then they swept through a round robin. Wasn't the toughest round robin. They played Army, Creighton, and Air Force. And then they beat Xavier. It's a 2-game series. They beat Xavier 11-3 yesterday. We'll see how this game ends today. But, I mean, you look, I guess their calling card this year has been pitching. So, as of earlier this week, I know they got a top-5 ERA, a top-5 whip nationally, 219 ERA as a team, 102 whip. Friday guy, Reed Smith, a right-hander. 4.15 ERA, 1.46 WHIP, 6 walks, 12 strikeouts, and 13 innings. Don't have a lot of information on him. I'm going reading off this this D1 report, but Saturday guy Luke Nichols, the lefty, and it sounds like he's kind of the USM kryptonite type guy. Crafty, 87-91 plus sinker, good changeup, and yeah, I mean he has good numbers. 2 walks, 15 Ks. And then on Sunday, Turner Swistak, who's, you know, Hattiesburg guy, Oak Grove guy, and he's kind of been a journeyman. He started at Southeastern, and then he went to Pearl River, and then he went to Tennessee, and now he's a lot tech. But, you know, he has a 4.15 ERA, 1.46 whip, walk 6, struck out 12 and 13 innings, and kind of just looking at their bullpen. So a guy that's kind of caught my eye, Sam Broderson, he has a 0 ERA, 0.89 whip. Opponents hitting .36 against or .036 against him. He has walked 7, struck out 17, but he's kind of a low 90s guy. Transfer from Wingate College. Greg Martinez is still there, the guy that threw that, you know, gym against USM and that crazy 2021 night game of the conference tournament on Saturday. That, you know, he had not been good all year. That he pitched really well, so he's kind of known in infamy at USM. Then Ethan Bates, who is a 2-way guy. 1.42 ERA, 1.11 WHIP, 5 walks, 13 strikeouts. So they're, I mean, it's your kind of your classic Lane Burroughs La Tech team. Older, I think they have 23 or 24 juniors and seniors. But I guess offensively, 930 OPS as a team. They've hit 14 home runs. And the two guys you look for are, I guess, 3. So Cole McConnell, who missed most of last year with like an unknown suspension. I don't think that was really ever revealed. But he has a 1.280 OPS, 3 home runs. Ethan Bates is a guy that's been there a while, 1186 OPS, 2 home runs. And then a transfer they brought in from Eckerd College, which is in the Sunshine State League in Division II, which is a really good Division II league. He's hit 409, 1,000 OPS, more of a hit tool guy. I think he's going to play second base for him. Not going to hit a ton of power, but a really good hitter. Then, you know, they got, you know, George Corona, who's been there forever. I mean, it's, you know, 912 OPS. Cashman Fur is a transfer from UNO as 848 OPS. So, you're kind of a lot of tech teams of old that they don't have a ton of, you know, maybe great draftable prospects, but they're older. They played a lot of college baseball. And, you know, they've added, you know, several guys that are success at the lower levels. We're going to interview Burroughs talking about how he wants to kind of hit the portal more of the D2 NAIA guys that, you know, had a lot of plate appearances, logged a lot of innings, and played a lot of good baseball. It's probably going to be a Q1 series at the end of the year, big non-conference series. And, you know, they're one of 5 undefeated teams, I think, with Texas A&M, UC Irvine. I can't remember the others, but they're 1 of 5. I know.
TCU.
TCU. I think. Yeah, so, and there's one other maybe. But, yeah, so I guess y'all's thoughts on La Tech.
Yeah, La Tech has the superpower of every year that we play them. I'm like, oh, this is going to have to be a brand new team. And it just seems like no guys ever graduate. Cole McConnell, the year we played them 13 times, I think I went to half of those games in Ruston. Cole McConnell, Ardarius Myers from Seminary, George Corona. I think there was a Bates, but it's a different Bates. There's another Netterville in this team. They have the same last names every year. It seems like they're always there. So like you said, old team, experienced team. They play in a wiffle ball park, short porch in right field. They're going to hit the ball, which means we're going to have to as well. It would be a nice added victory to give them their first loss of the year, given the history with this program, although not in the same conference anymore. I think it's cool that we're playing a series. I also like that we get one series on the road to get that taste before conference play starts. I think last year it was. We had all 4 at home non-conference. Am I right?
2023. It was.
Last year,
I can't remember if it was 22 or 23. Yep.
Yeah, so you get some, like you said, hopefully it's a Q1 series at the end of the year with a new RPI formulas where you get more credit for playing these kind of games on the road. But yeah, we can't overlook them because they played a weak schedule. As Coach Oz says, you got to do a lot of things right to win a college baseball game, and they've done that 12 times in a row, which we've been far from doing. And yeah, Love Shack's a good place to watch some baseball. I bet it'll be packed with their pretty good fan base for college baseball. So I will actually be there. This will be my first three games of the year to watch in person. So you'll have some boots on the ground coverage for me. I'm excited to watch us play, and I feel like I drive back from Ruston a lot disappointed with baseball results. I hope it's not the case this year.
We're going to be able to see it live. But, yeah, I mean, everything you said, right? Lane Bros always has a tough team. They often have our number. It looks like there's a good chance for that not to be any different this year with the start that they've had. So I hope that the last week has more or less lit a fire in our players, especially considering the implications of this weekend. And that we can go in there and make a big noise.
Yeah, I feel obligated to say with the Hattiesburg residents starting on Sunday that you can chalk that one as a loss. So I hope we get the first two. Just kidding. But I think in years past, the last few times that Tech may have had a weakness, I would say, is their pen. And this year they have like 9 relievers with a sub-2 ERA. So it may not be the case this year. I'm hoping that's a product of the schedule they play, and I hope that this will be a great weekend for our offense to wake up. And like I said, a wiffle ballpark. But yeah, we're going to have to play some good baseball to win.
Yeah, so just reviewing this last week in the Sun Belt, South won 2 out of 3 against UNCW. Arkansas State lost 2 out of 3 at Missouri State. Troy lost 2 out of 3 at Northwestern State. A little bit of a surprise there. But yeah, they lose that series. ODU wins 2 out of 3 against Charlotte. Coastal swept Liberty. Pretty good sweep there. No Liberty, 5-7, so not quite what they've been in years past. Georgia Southern lost 2-3 to Campbell, which they had a chance to really win that series on Saturday. Campbell came back on Saturday, and then they come back on Sunday, too. They scored 6 in the 7th and 8th combined to win that 10-5. DAMU swept Cornell. Marshall, first series at their new park, won 2 out of 3 against Manhattan. Happy for them that they get to play in a nice new facility. Georgia State swept Western Carolina on the road. App State took 2 out of 3 from Southern Illinois. ULM won 2 out of 3 from Incarnate Word. ULO went 0-3 at the Astros College Classic. They lost to Vandy, LSU, and Houston. All pretty close games, I think. I know the LSU one was a 1-run loss, and then they lost to Houston in 11 innings. Texas State went 2-1. That's right. Yeah. So they won against Houston on Friday, and then they had a great win over Texas on Saturday. They lost to LSU on Sunday. But 2-1, I think that's definitely a good result for Texas State. So any takeaways from Sun Belt baseball last week?
Yeah, I actually listened to the end of the Texas State-Houston game on my drive, the lovely drive from Dallas to Jackson this weekend, and they were down multiple times, came back and won. So 2 out of 3 for them in that tournament's big. I think that I saw an article D1 posted this week about the potential of us being a 4-bid league, which is exciting. I think that the 4 teams prophesied being us, Texas State, Coastal, and Troy. And I do think those are the clear-cut top 4 right now. I think that although they went 0-3, Lafayette did play better baseball than they have been the last few weekends. But Georgia Southern's had some opportunities, but haven't won any of their big marquee series. But I guess they could turn on in conference play. Old Dominion's 8-4, but I do think those 4 have solidified themselves as the top tier of the league, like we kind of expected.
I was just going to say, yeah, I think last week I said that I hope Texas State does, makes a little bit of noise over there in that Houston tournament, and I obviously would have liked to have seen them win a couple more games or however many there were more of, but. Good to see them get what they did, and I was able to watch one. I was traveling this week, but I was able to watch one at a restaurant, and they look to be a pretty good team. So excited to see more from them.
Yeah, and honestly, they maybe been. Well, I guess they did lose 2 out of 3 of that Round Rock. I would have said maybe they've been the most impressive team, but I guess you still say Coastal has been the most impressive team. But, I mean, even you, you know, you could say, I mean, USM would be in that conversation just because we haven't lost a weekend series. So I do think – I think those four that Brent mentioned are still the four that you kind of watch. And that ULL losing to Rice last week, that's tough to take them seriously. But, you know, and then they got swept, which is – I mean, that's a tough field. But, you know, you would at least like to see them win that Houston game. But yeah, tough 0-3 week for them. And I guess South is 10-2, although they haven't really played anybody. But I guess looking ahead to this weekend, South going to Nebraska, Coastal hosting Michigan, GMU going to East Tennessee, Georgia Southern hosting Radford, Georgia State hosting Army, Troy going to Indiana, Marshall hosting SEMO, Old Dominion hosting Northeastern, which was a preseason top 25 team. App going to Winthrop, Arkansas State hosting Eastern Illinois, ULL hosting Tulane, that's a fun series. Texas State hosting Sam Houston, that's another fun series. And ULM hosting Alabama A&M, which is 303 in RPI, I just checked. So that's not going to help their RPI, but I don't think.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I think he'll be on the call for those games. I thought I saw that he's going to be doing baseball with ULM in the basketball tournament this week.
Yeah, I listened to a couple innings opening weekend. He's doing great.
Yeah, so that's not going to be good for their RPI, but I don't know if they had much of an at-large chance to begin with. But any thoughts on those? I guess the two things you look at is it's rare to see Southern teams go play at Big Ten schools, but I guess, you know, it's late enough in the year where it's warm enough you can play at Indiana or Nebraska, and I think those are both return series. So, but, yeah, anything that I guess sort of stands out in those weekend series.
Yeah, that Troy series stuck out to me. Indiana, you said, I think?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good Big Ten program. That's where Lemonis was, and they've probably been better without him, actually. We were talking about that the other day. That Old Dominion series as well. I think that this may be the best slate of non-con series that we've had in the Sun Belt this year. Comparable, at least, respectable. And I guess Coastal just doesn't play away games, which no. If I were in college in Myrtle Beach, I probably wouldn't either.
Yeah, let's win them all. I mean, that's all I can say.
Yeah, so I guess football schedule was released last Friday, and pretty standard schedule. I mean, people already know the non-conference slate. But I guess the highlights, no weekday games, no consecutive home or road games in league play. You do play consecutive home games against USF and or Southeastern USF. I don't think there's anything that, I mean, Thanksgiving is on the road, which is good because that's always a tough attendance game at home. I guess just kind of thoughts on the schedule. Nope. I mean, just no weekday game is kind of thing that stands out to me.
Fitch, you want to go?
Yeah. No weekday game is exciting. I mean, those are always kind of fun as a novelty, right? If they're not every single year. So, I think one every few years is a good cadence at most. But, as Coach Hall is selling it, it's a very fan-friendly schedule. A lot of travelable games, which is, you know, what we're getting used to now in the Sun Belt. So I'm looking forward to it. It makes me excited the more I look at it. So manage my expectations. On that, but seems to be a good schedule.
Yeah, I like that. We touched on all Saturdays is nice and easy to remember. I like that the bye week is right after non-conference. You can kind of get healthy for conference play. You don't go a month where you don't see the team in Hattiesburg. The non-con kind of scares me in that you could see a world with 4-0 if a lot of things go right, and you can see a world with 0-4 or 1-3 if a lot of things go wrong. And I think
Southeastern's tough FCS team.
Yeah, that's why I said 0-4. But I think that South Florida Jacksonville State swing in late September is going to teach you a lot about this team. But if we play well, I think I hate that I may even say this out loud, so y'all can mush me for this later. But I think that 6-3, the first nine may be achievable, and then the last three is a tough stretch coming in with Texas State, South, and Troy. Texas State finally got a quarterback, it looks like, from JMU, so they may be the new favorites in the West, according to the polls preseason. But, yeah, I like the symmetricalness. That's not a word, but I just made it of the schedule of all Saturdays and home away most of the time.
Yeah, I do like the
symmetry. I think is the word you're looking for there.
But symmetricalness has more syllables. Fits. It sounds cooler.
Yeah, on
that's
the
fair. Hey, 6-3. Let's go.
Yeah, graphic me with that one.
On the weekday game thing, I kind of like playing one weekday game a year, just because it does, you know, give you, I guess, a little bit of a boost at the national level, just in terms of people to get to watch your games. But, you know, you can kind of look at South Alabama last year. I mean, that was, you would have loved to play that game at 11 a.m. on a Saturday instead of a Tuesday night when the whole country was able to watch. So there is some positives and negatives to that. But I do think the schedule, talking about, you know, starting 6-3, I do think it is kind of backloaded. I mean, you kind of look, you play some pretty winnable games early on in the league slate. I mean, you get ULL at home, which is, I guess, could be a swing game. I mean, they're kind of in that 500 range right now. But, I mean, you get ULM on the road, Arkansas State at home, and then that JMU will be tough, but then you get Marshall at home. So those are three pretty winnable games. And I think, yeah, I mean, I guess if, you know, talking about Hall's, you know, job security, which I think we got a question on, it could depend on that finish, and that finish is pretty tough. But, yeah, I agree. And by the way, there are two bye weeks this year because of the way the schedule falls. So you have this the week after the Jacksonville State game, and then also between JMU and Marshall. So you have two bye weeks, and it's just because, I guess, the way the calendar falls. So that is, I guess, an oddity with this year's schedule. So.
Yeah, it's almost like it falls first bye weeks after non-con, and then the second bye week is right before you – well, Marshall, but I guess right before the back end of the conference schedule, where it kind of ramps up. It's kind of funny how that kind of divides it into thirds in a way with three different tiers of football. Yeah. Should we get into some questions?
Yeah.
All right. First, we have a triple header from Kyle from Midtown. He says, is La Tech a team to worry about, or is it their 11-0 rate? Is their 11-0 record a paper tiger?
Another 12-0, but yeah, I would say, I mean, I think they're the best weekend opponent that USM has faced. I mean, Indiana State, I guess we'll see what they do. I think they play Florida A&M, and then, you know, Marist is Marist, and then Missouri State, I think, is fine, but I think they'd be kind of a middle-of-the-pack Sun Belt team, I think. I think a lot of techs, I mean, just you look at their pitching numbers, and they've got enough hitting to where, you know, I think they are. I don't think they're like a top 25 team, like a team that, you know, I don't think it's like their 2021 team that hosts it. But I mean, I could definitely see them being like a low 2 seed, which, you know, would be very solid. So
I agree. Fitz.
Yeah, hard to, and look, I know it's possible, but hard to be a paper tiger at 12-0. But yeah, I think they're going to give us everything we want and more this weekend.
Yep. I agree. I think we touched on it in our preview. It's a good team with good arms and a very experienced lineup playing at home, and having added history with them probably doesn't make it any easier. Next question. What is your favorite current USN sports rivalry?
Do you want to go Fitz or go first?
I'm going to say ULL, and that's just because we seem to just have their number very consistently. Now, I know that's subject to change as soon as this podcast is published because I put it on paper. But, no, it's a fun fan base. Lafayette's a fun town. And overall, the banter back and forth is always pretty funny, too. So I would say they're my favorite.
You took all the words out of my mouth. I'll just retweet your answer.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say ULL just because that's the one that – I mean, ULL and South are like the, I guess, you know, this is the 180 between both of those schools where USM owns ULL and seemingly everything. Although, I guess basketball has been, you know, 50-50. But, you know, certainly in football and baseball, USM has had the advantage there. And then, you know, South has owned USM in football, basketball. Baseball, you got the sweep over them last year, turned the tide a little bit, you know, starting with the getting in on the car door the opposite way.
You know, we took 2 out of 3 in 22. So we've had them for 2 years, Pat.
That's right. Because they won that opening game in 2022, the first midweek, and then we won 2 in a row. So the tide turned with the car thing and baseball. But yeah, I'd have to say ULL right now.
I'll say another thing about ULL. I feel like every game we play them in the Big Three sports always feels like a good game. I'm not saying Duke UNC, but the way that there's never a 10-point game in Duke UNC, I feel like that's the way we are in all sports with UL.
Yeah.
And last question from Kyle from Midtown. He says, say something nice about Rustin. And I'll start on this one. As a Dallas resident, Rustin is a perfect halfway point between Dallas and Hattiesburg, just geographically, latitudinally. It's another new word I just made. And due to that geography, I stop in there Zaxby's a lot, and it's never failed me.
I'll say they have a Whataburger. That's pretty nice.
Yep. Fitz, do you have a compliment for Rustin, or is this a don't say anything nice, don't say anything at all kind of deal?
That's a tough one. I will say I enjoyed a restaurant there one time. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a steakhouse slash sorority date party venue somehow, and the food was decent, so that's nice enough.
There we go. All right, now we'll take to the X. Formerly known as Twitter. Andrew from Tupelo says, who is the best pickleball player on the podcast, and when will Southern Miss field a pickleball team? Do any of y'all dabble in the pickle?
I do not.
I play, negative. So I guess I may be that answer by default, Andy. And then to your second question, congrats, when will Southern Miss field a pickleball team, I think that that may involve you having to make a move from Tupelo to Hattiesburg to help facilitate. So it's my challenge.
Yeah.
Campbell Cave, that, mind you, this is after the Indiana State series pre-Mississippi State, says, I assume we're not quite back, but on the cusp of being back, what do we have to do this week to be back? I think scoring two more runs in the last eight innings last night would have been a good step. But back banter aside, the two out of three in Indiana State was a big step in the right direction, even if that involved minimal offense. Do you all have any commentary there?
Fitz?
I'd like a sweep this weekend. That would be nice, especially considering what happened in the midweek. So,
yeah, I think if you somehow sweep this weekend, I mean, I think the realistic best case is winning two out of three. But I think if you win two out of three, that'd be a step toward getting to back. And then if you can, let's say you beat Bama in the midweek. Let's say you win two out of three against Tech, beat Bama in the midweek, easily sweep Marshall, which we get, I guess, a little bit of that Marist taste out of your mouth. And then who's the Georgia Southern is the – let's say you're going like a seven or eight-game win streak. That'd be back.
I would agree with that sentiment. This is from Eagle Ball, one of the many burners our fan base has ignited this, it seems, this season. It says, how big do you think that series win will be at the end of this season? Referring to Indiana State.
Yeah, man, another way it'd be pretty big. Maybe not as big as it was last year, because now you have, you know, like I think Jonathan mentioned earlier, the new quadrants where you have to be in like the top 30 to get a Q1 win at home. And I don't think Indiana State will be top 30, but I mean, they could probably be top 50. So it's a good win. I mean, it's a good series win. It'll probably be a higher Q2 if I had to guess. And, you know, I think they certainly have a chance to be an at-large team. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good series. I don't think it's going to, you know, necessarily push you from, you know, a three seed to a two seed or a two seed to a host, but it's a good one to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, I haven't seen any news on their Friday guy. Y'all seen any injury news on him?
I have not. I should have checked on him. Hopefully he's okay because, yeah, I mean, he had really good stuff.
Yeah, I think that – I was going to say, I think that his health might dictate how good of a series win that was, because he was a bona fide Friday guy, and I think that team's going to win a lot of games if he's healthy. Fitz?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, hope they win a lot the rest of the way.
Next one's from Cloverleaf, loyal listener, Cloverleaf Mall, and it's a picture of the Andy Staples Super League theory, I guess, that was posted this week or last. And it looks like 48 teams, Southern Miss not being one of them, all into two super conferences, and it just says thoughts, question mark. Yeah, thoughts?
Let Fitz go on that.
We don't have enough time. Yeah, we don't have enough time for my thoughts there. But I don't know if 48's the number. I mean, if you look at the disparity between that list alone, from top to bottom in budget, there's a fairly large gap. So 48 may be that number, or maybe more, maybe less. I'm willing to bet less when the dust settles at the end of the day that it's more like 32. Or so, but who knows?
And the less the better if you're a Southern Miss fan, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping.
Wasn't going to say that, but.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, Hall's kind of been talking about the split that's coming and that kind of thing. So hopefully, I mean, at this point, like, I really don't really care what they do to football. Just let the SEC and the Big Ten take their ball and go home or whatever. And then, you know, Florida State and Clemson can join with them. But just, like, don't touch basketball and baseball and the other sports that are still pretty fun. So that's, I guess that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to say, Fitz. Sorry, as the probably most pessimistic one on the chat. I was going to relate it back to what Hall has been saying and what he's quoting in the article about the split's coming, got to be ready for it. Don't know what it's going to look like, but I don't think any of us are naive enough to think we'd be in the first tier. So we've got to take what comes to us and try to prepare ourselves for the best position possible in that second tier and hope that we can be successful there and hope that that is only a football thing and not any other sport thing. But
no doubt. Yeah,
thank you, Cloverleaf. We appreciate your macroeconomic NCAA landscape question. This is from Mustard Buzzard Bleacher Creature. That's a tongue twister. And they say, slightly separate from sports, but an interesting topic I think your panel is qualified to answer. What city improvements would you like to see in Hattiesburg to complement the university better? Example, a more grand of an entrance at the 49 North entrance of the city. Pat, I think you are perfect to answer this.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about this. I think a big thing that would help this Hattiesburg and, you know, USM as a whole is like the airport with a couple more like options. So right now you have Houston. It's like one flight a day, one flight a day out. So maybe increase like that to two and then find like another hub. I just think that would increase access to Hattiesburg and the university and for, I guess, university officials to, you know, go in and out. And I just think that would help, you know, if you had like an airport, like on the size of, let's say, Monroe. I think Monroe has like a couple flights in and out of there. So I know that's a kind of a way out there answer, but like an improved airport, I guess we're just in terms of more one more destination and then, you know, a couple more flights in and out, you know.
Yeah, the one that I can think of, and I know it's been talked about because I participated in a study about it, but Highway 49 corridor, just I guess it's east of Highway 49. How we can figure out how to get that more accessible via foot traffic, and to have some more attractive businesses over there as far as bars and restaurants go. Not that the offering over there isn't good so far, but just the access for students I think is the largest issue, and I think that would be huge, you know. And I think another thing that doesn't get talked about enough is I think Hattiesburg could be a little bit more welcoming, and I'm not talking about the city, I'm talking about more of the population. Could be more welcoming to some more newer and unique businesses, I'll say. I feel like we'll open a new restaurant that may not fit in the normal rotation, and we'll go there a lot the first 3 months and then we'll forget about it and then it'll wither away to nothing. But I don't know if that's not a Hattiesburg problem, that's an everywhere problem. But I think that Highway 49 corridor right there has a ton of potential and could be a really big entertainment hub for students if we can figure out how to get over there on foot. We as in current students and not someone that graduated almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, this sounds literal and maybe it's silly of an answer for me, but I think just more black and gold period paint buildings, businesses, whatever. I've had the ability to go to Stillwater a few times in the past year, and that what you said about the Monroe Airport, the Stillwater Airport kind of reminded me of that. I think it's four flights a day only to Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and Dallas. And it was just orange everywhere. And not that Hattiesburg doesn't buy into Southern Miss and vice versa. And I think we've taken a huge step the last 8 to 10 years improving that. But that just screamed how much that the businesses and everything in Stillwater love their Cowboys. And I think that Hattiesburg could definitely do that. But I'll just never forget how orange that city was.
Yeah. I was going to say that the same thing. I was in, and I didn't take any pictures of it, but I was in Lafayette for work travel this week and went to, I walked into an Albertsons for something and they literally had this huge cutout, like merch section for I mean, there was a very slim part that was like LSU, right? But you know, they're an hour from, or less than an hour from Baton Rouge, really. But it was just a ton of Cajuns fan merch. And I just feel like you don't see that nearly enough in Hattiesburg outside of your dedicated store.
It's like the whole thing, the old Eagle Post quote, the Soester Dollar General has like a whole shelf of USM stuff.
You know, it's funny, as I live just south of Soester, really, and I went in the Dollar General last week to get some deodorant or something, and there was a stack of Southern Miss t-shirts on a shelf, so I thought that was funny.
Oh, nice. Living up to their reputation.
Eagle Post never lies, Pat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Next question from Mason. He says, who are your top three rivals in your minds? Why do you hate them? And is there a specific memory that sparks your reasons for hatred? I think we touched on it earlier. I think conference-wise, South, UL, and Troy being the most travelable games, and it seems like being pretty equal in competition in all three sports every year. I would say your top three rivals conference-wise. Obviously, baseball is a different story with the teams in state we play midweeks with, and Tech not being in the conference anymore, I'd say. But I think just a lot of history, the schools we have a lot of history with and that are travelable, those always strike my mind as the bigger rivals.
I think, yeah, I agree with that. And I think if you take the word rival out of this, it kind of expands the selection, right? Because maybe former rival is a good word for a couple of these. But I think about Western Kentucky just because of the experience I had there in the conference championship game in 2015 and the way their fans acted was pretty crazy. UAB, the way they had our number during the Larry Fedora years made me really hate that program, especially considering the implications of that game in the 2011 season, which we talked about offline before the show. But those two are huge, and I think have garnered plenty of reasons for my hatred. And then you throw Louisiana Tech in there for Memphis. All the reasons we mentioned before. Memphis is a good one.
East Carolina.
Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Just, I guess, the teams I hate the most are not really rivals. But you kind of look at like a Memphis or like an ECU or a Tulane, and those are kind of, I guess, quasi rivals in the sense that I guess you still play Tulane a little bit in football. And but yeah, I guess you just kind of look at Memphis. I mean, the memory that comes back to me is beating them in 2012 to snap that 18 game losing streak to them, and then, you know, Tulane, the win at 2022, that comes to mind. But I guess, like, right now within the league, I mean, you have to say South Alabama. I mean, I think maybe you should even emphasize that more just because South has had our number and take that a little more seriously. Lafayette, obviously. So, and I don't know if you put Troy in there too, just because that's a little farther away. But I think right now within the league, South and ULL, and then I guess Tulane sort of just, but you don't play them every year. They're not in the conference. And, you know, Memphis, I mean, you're going to play them a couple times here in 5 or 6 years or so. But
oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, 28 and 30 maybe, but that's a little far away and it's going to be infrequent. So,
yeah, I'm going to skip over some of these that were questions about the predictions for the game on Tuesday. Next one is from Justin. He says, 12 games in with the big series win over Indiana State, over or under 40 regular season wins?
I would say under for a regular season, just because then you'd have to go 40 and 15 in the regular season. And so you're 8-5 now. So that means you'd have to go 32-10. Yeah, 32-10, which would be really difficult. I still think there's a path once you're talking about conference tournament, hopefully a regional and then hopefully beyond a regional. But regular season, it'd be pretty tough at this point.
Yeah,
I agree. I think you hopefully flirt with it in the regular season and hopefully can keep the streak alive in the postseason. This is from Climate, Energy, and Sports. He says, is Will Hall on the hot seat? If so, what would get him off the hot seat? I think we've answered this one in previous episodes, but we can maybe give a Cliff Notes version of what we said.
Yeah, man, I think 7-5 will get him another year. I still think people would be, I guess, a little uneasy just because that would be 4 years where you hadn't won the division. But I think, I mean, to get him off the hot seat, if he goes like 9-3 and wins the division, I think that would, you know, really, you know, up his approval rating, I guess, if such a thing exists for college football coaches. But yeah, I mean, 9-3, I think would really cool it. I think 7-5 will definitely get him another year or better. 7-5 or, you know, 8-4. I think 6-6, I guess it would kind of depend on the finish.
Yeah, I'm with you. Last question is from Maurice Berry. It's a nice, some kind of AI image of Scott Berry with long hair is the profile picture. It's two-parter. It says, any word on what the Pete upgrades may look like? I'm going to break some news in this podcast. The athletic department actually reached out to the three of us and gave us the renderings of the Pete, and they look really cool, don't y'all think?
Yep, we got the first look at it.
Yeah, the water slide is probably my favorite part.
Oh, really? I like the Golden Eagle sculpture in right center field. Obviously joking. No word on what those may look like. We've just seen and heard the same speculation you have. Second question is, are we in a better position to host this year or at this point last year?
I would definitely say at this point last year, just because that Maris loss is going to be a killer in RPI. And last year there was nothing even close to that Maris loss. So I would definitely say last year.
Definitely agree. I think that last year's team had a few more sweeps in the closet last year, and we're kind of 2 out of 3 in people to death this year. I would like to see some more sweeps for sure. But I agree. Last year we were in a little better position.
Yep.
And that's all the questions.
Okay. So, and I guess to close out, so we had mentioned it. This won't be in the recording, but we forgot to mention, it sounds like Jay Leitner will be back for this upcoming, for the conference tournament. I don't think that's confirmed or official, but trending that way. He's been with the team at practice. So, I mean, obviously, it'd be a tremendous story if the team could win it for him and go to the NCAA tournament. So, we did want to just mention that. Because that is a major, I guess, development with the basketball program. So, anything that you guys have left?
Yeah, shout out to the ladies winning their first game. They're in the quarters. Let's see if Tom Davis and Grayson can do something cool on that, and maybe get one of our teams in the dance. But they like our men go from 1 seed to 6 seed in year over year. But anything can happen in March. That's what John Rothstein says, right?
That's right.
You know, all the hopes and prayers in the world to Coach Leitner as he takes it back to the courts this week, and good to have him back. And then, obviously, rooting for the women's team to get it done, and hopefully, we can see that happen.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, we'll shoot for next Monday unless basketball is in the conference championship, which would mean that would be, I guess, a Wednesday because baseball is playing Tuesday night against Alabama. So if basketball is in the conference championship, which we hope it is. That'd be a Wednesday recording. If not, that'll be on Monday. So we'll I guess keep people updated on that. So
they're in the championship. We may want to do one of those live Twitter things on Sunday night after the game.
Yeah, preview. I guess it'd be App State or Arkansas State or ULL or probably one of those three teams that are in the final. Yeah, maybe so. That'll do it. We'll be back sometime in the next 5 to 7 days, and we appreciate people for listening. Thanks.